Do you remember the last time you picked up a pen and noticed the quality? How about a razor you handled that didn't feel cheaply made? When was the last time a product made a true and lasting impression on you? In this era of the mass-produced and disposable, anything lovingly handcrafted seems to be a rare thing. Maybe it's time for a change, and Spindlecraft can help. At Spindlecraft, passion and superior quality make it stand out from the faceless, automated crowd. Material for each piece of work is thoughtfully chosen, crafted, sanded, and finally polished with the kind of attention to detail and dedication you can't get off of an assembly line. At Spindlecraft, they know that quality of the material is as important as the quality of the craftsmanship and is a reflection of both the artist and the customer. So, rather than buying some cheap pens or razors that you won't give a second thought, purchase something from Spindlecraft. To see what they have to offer, go to www.spindlecraft.com and at the checkout, enter the word GEEKS. That's G-E-E-K-S to get 10% off. We're sure that once you have a Spindlecraft product in your hand, you won't want to put it down. Welcome to the Freaking Geeks Podcast, the flagship podcast of Freaking Geeks Media. In this podcast, hosts Michael, Sarah, and Barry crank the geekiness to 11, covering everything from movies and television to pop culture, video games, books, and so much more. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. The podcast is produced each week, so feel free to add us to your favorite RSS feed or on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The links will be in the show notes. Okay, now it's time to start the show.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Michael, and with me are my two co-hosts tonight, Jacob and Raker.
Hello.
Oh.
All right, so we are here to review Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, the final installment of the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise, at least as we know it. You know, at least the one helmed by James Gunn. This is kind of it, everybody. You know, it's is there a chance that we might get more down the road? Sure, but it's certainly not going to have that James Gunn flavor that only he can bring. And yeah, so in a lot of ways, this movie is, you know, there's a celebration, I think, for a really good trilogy, but there's also a sense of loss, you know, a little sadness there because this is the end. Yeah. So let's do this. Let's go around the table and just give our brief non-spoiler thoughts on the movie. Jacob, why don't you start?
I loved it. It was a perfect blend of humor, emotion, and just like you said at the beginning, honestly, a perfect farewell to this Guardians of the Galaxy team. And honestly, after watching it, this Guardians of the Galaxy is my favorite trilogy of all of MCU.
Okay. Raker, you're up.
Enjoyed it thoroughly as well. And I'd have to say, you know, I'm in agreement, Jacob, in terms of, I've even gone as far as to say, you know, it's a toss up for me between Avengers and, Guardians, like my favorite, you know, franchise within a franchise of, Marvel. And, you know, this movie was just, you know, solidified. It is now I know, you know, why this was just, great movie. I mean, I'm going to really have a hard time saying anything negative about it.
Yeah, look, I can't disagree. I think this is a good movie that is, you know, it's got a lot more of an emotional heart, beating heart than I think any of the previous installments had. You know, like the first one, you know, definitely had some heart in there. Obviously, there was, There's kind of a lot going on there as well. And the second one, too, I guess, does have, you know, I guess I should rephrase this. Each installment has its own kind of beating heart, but I feel like this one has maybe a bigger one, and it's maybe a little bloodier. And I think it kind of wears its heart on its sleeve, is another way to put it, too, because given that it is the end of the trilogy, it would kind of need to be. You know, there's a lot to sew up here, a lot of story arcs to get through, and a lot of things to resolve, both from a plot standpoint and also character dynamics. So I, you know, thoroughly enjoyed myself. All right, so with our non-spoiler, you know, views out of the way, let's
out of the way. Thank you.
Yeah.
Let her rip, right, Michael?
That's right. This is now the spoiler warning. You can exit the podcast now and come back later if you haven't watched the movie, which I highly recommend. Not all movies, you don't need to watch every movie, I guess. Some people don't care about spoilers, but this is one of those movies, given that it's the end of a trilogy, I would hold off, you know, listening to the rest of the podcast unless you've seen the movie. All right, so let's jump into it. So this movie, in a nutshell, is really about Rocket.
Oh, yeah.
And it's interesting with the comments that I've been hearing since it was released, where even James Gunn said that if you go back and you look at the trilogy as a whole, it's really about Rocket, which
hence she said, this is your story all along.
Yeah. And I can see what he's saying, but I mean, like, at the same time, it's like, well, yeah, but it's certainly, there's a lot of Star-Lord in here too, so
I think it's like this movie focuses a lot more on Rocket, but I would say it's like, it's Rocket and Peter's trilogy. Like, it's a story about them both.
Yeah.
And like,
I think a more apt description is more like, we finally get the story of Rocket that we've been waiting for.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. Because, look, I'll be honest, I had no knowledge of Guardians of the Galaxy before I watched the movie, and, you know, the first one in 2014, right?
Yeah, you know, it's very Iron Man-esque in the sense that it's, you know, very B, if not C level comic.
And this is one set of movies that made the comics do better.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Sure. This actually did more for the comics than any of the other MCU movies have done for their characters.
Yeah, agreed.
So for me, I think, you know, having no knowledge, and I think a lot of people didn't, you know, one of the things that I kept thinking about when I first watched the original, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy was, well, Billy, Rocket sure has a lot of this, you know, obviously he's been had modifications. You can see a lot of the stuff that's been put into his body. There's something going on here. I wonder what his story is, right?
Yeah.
And of course, we never got that. And then, you know, we didn't really get much more in, I believe, Volume 2. I'm a little hazy on that. It's been a little while since I've seen that one, but I don't remember getting a lot of more information there. So in a lot of ways, I feel like this third movie was a way of really just giving us finally that story. And so I guess I disagree a little bit with it that it's been Rocket's story all along. I think, you know, we have a lot of Guardians Galaxy.
Well, I mean, you can take that context and think of it within the film when she said it to him. Or you can think of it as many people have viewed it as his movie. Well, as that movie being strictly about him.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. In a quick rundown of the plot is as goes, which basically is, you know, because it's been so long, right? At the end of the last Guardians movie, we were, you know, basically told we were being given, why can't I think of his name right now? The Adam Warlock.
Oh, yeah.
In this, right? And so we knew that was coming. It was it was shown. We were getting this guy, and so he attacks Rocket, and you know, it's he gets, you know, mortally wounded, and you know, after that, it's like this movie where it's a race to, you know, kind of break in. To, you know, there's this kind of this almost like this this switch in his body that kind of keeps, you know, them from being able to actually heal him. And so they have to go on this quest where they have to kind of infiltrate, you know, facility to kind of get this stuff, you know, this chip, I think is it a chip? They have to get them.
They need a code. So that way they can turn off the kill switch inside the technology that was implanted in it, because anytime they tried to use any technology or any kind of healing medication, it rejected and actually made him worse.
Right.
So they had to find a way to turn that off so they could heal him. And the only place to get that, high evolutionaries.
Loved High Evolutionary. What's that guy's name?
It's Chikawundi Iwuji. Huh.
Does he have a nickname I can reference him by?
Not to my knowledge.
Darn it.
I think in interviews he went by, like, the castmates called him Chuck.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, I think, like, because he just went by Chuck.
I thought he was brilliant.
Oh, yeah. He did a great job. He's
one of the better villains, and I think probably in my...
I think so, too.
I think he's the best villain of the Phase 4.
You know, so trite. You know, the old, I want to make the world a better place, and this is how I anticipate doing it. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, like, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? He definitely had that madman edge to it. Yeah, he did. He did, and it's a shame that, you know, well, I can't say that's the end of him. You know what I mean?
There's theories as to what the actor might be used for in the future.
Oh, I hope it's something cool, because...
Because there's no longer going to be the actor playing Kang. There's talks that they might use this actor as a replacement and say High Evolutionary is a variant of Kang.
Well, we'll see, but I will say there's this very kind of unhinged quality to his character that's just barely being kept, you know.
It's like he's trying to keep himself composed, and he can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the weird thing is, a lot of times that doesn't work. I've seen versions of this character a lot over the years, and it just seems like, I don't know if it's the script or if it's the actor or, you know, the performance or whatever. But I've seen a lot of those performances where they have, you know, where the character is, you know, basically very, very unstable, and they're trying but not succeeding very well and kind of keeping that, you know, inward, and it tends to not work too well. But in this instance, it felt like it was done pitch perfect, you know.
He had a great job of showing, like, everything around him disgusted him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
He put on that the facade that he really wasn't, and then, like, it just, he did a good job of, like, slowly, like, having those moments seep out, and then he just went unhinged, and I think he did it. Like, the actor sold that. If it would have been any other actor, it would have been a lot harder to do, I think.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that is a credit, you know, again, to the performance and to the writing, and it kind of reminds me of Agent Smith in The Matrix, you know, where he's like, this smell, like, everything around me just absolutely disgusts me, and I'm repulsed constantly, but he had to kind of have a blank face most of the time. He couldn't show how much he was disgusted by everything around him, and I think that's a good comparison, I think, with the High Evolutionary, and the way that, now he's obviously doing it less successfully, but I think it's kind of a similar thing where he looks around and just everything disgust him. He just sees weakness and a lack of perfection constantly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know who he based the character off of? It was from H.G. Wells's The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Okay. Well, that makes sense then.
Yeah, like he came out and said like that was his like basis for making that character and how he wrote him, and just honestly, chef's kiss on that, because it worked out really well.
Yeah. So basically, this movie, you know, has them breaking in. They do get in, and then it ends up being that it doesn't end up working, right? They think that they've succeeded, but then ultimately they don't, right? So they have to go to a very Earth-like planet. Drax ends up. I don't mean to do this, but I gotta toss out something in which, you know, we saw it in the trailers, you know, in the movie, you know, where the little child rules the ball to Groot, and then he picks it up and he just chucks it at her and just, you know, essentially kills the child. And here's the thing, I understand it's a funny moment, right? But the one problem that I had with that moment in particular is that they do that moment for a joke.
Mm-hmm.
But then they spend the rest of the movie having Drax take care of children and being like very much on their level, and he cares very much about them, and he speaks their language, and like he, you know, even at the end, they're like, you know, you are a father. That's what you are. And it's like, so, you know, it's such a small nitpick. I get that. But I remember thinking it kind of undermines that a little, or at least it either undermines the joke or it undermines the rest of the movie, in that I don't think Drax would pick up that ball and essentially try to kill a child with that ball.
No, I think he was trying to play with the kid, and Drax is stupid and doesn't know his own strength. I think that's what it was supposed to be.
I guess. Yeah. I suppose, like, but then, Drax, like, at the end of the movie, kind of they have
just they have this moment through.
Where,
yeah, right.
But they have this moment later where he speaks the language, right? Because nobody knows that language. I can't remember the name of it, but he speaks that language, and then there's some moment where these, like, I don't remember how he phrases it, but it, in the essence, it was something like, "I'm not as stupid as you actually think I am." Which I think is actually true. And I think if there's one criticism I would level at the series as a whole, is that, yes, in the first movie, there were things about Drax that, you know, he didn't understand. But in the first movie, I don't think that I ever felt that Drax was stupid, you know? Like, there were things he didn't understand, literal things, which he just, you know, probably from a cultural standpoint, he didn't get, because they didn't do, you know, the way their language probably worked, you know, he didn't really understand things, you know, to be taken literally. And so that played off as comedy, and he made some bad choices in that first movie, but I never thought that he was an idiot, right? Which is kind of what he became. Like, it's like, from the second movie onward, they basically decreased his intelligence by his, you know, 20 or 30 points, at least. I think I like the fact that Drax is probably a little smarter than they give him credit for, or at least the writers, or at least James Gunn.
Well, he could have also been playing dumber just because he knows the rest of them need to feel smarter.
Could be. Sure.
Because, like, he's also good. He picked up. It was very clear that he picked up on stuff that he probably wouldn't have if he was as stupid as everyone thought.
Okay.
And okay. I think that might have been it, too. And part of it is why, like, he knew that, like, because, like, if you look at, like, how Rocket was as a person, like, literally outside of Mantis, every other character on that in that crew is very, I need to be the leader kind of mentality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I can buy that.
I'll tell you what, though. Dave Bautista, you know, is born for that role.
Like, oh, yeah.
He, you know, as always, knocks it out of the park as Drax. Like, there's just really no other
way here around lately, it. He's impressed me with his acting.
Yeah, I assume so.
And I never would have thought that, considering that, you know, my brother used to watch, like, wrestling. He still watches it from time to time, and I used to watch a little, mostly because he would sit and watch it. And I remember him when he was, you know, wrestling full time. And it's just, I'm impressed because, you know, he successfully managed to do what a lot of wrestlers don't, you know, like the only ones that I can remember, Hulk Hogan, John Cena, and him. Those are the three that I would say probably have had the most successful, that I can think off the top of my head, the most successful transition in any way from wrestling to Hollywood.
You said Rock, right?
Oh, I'm sorry, The Rock. Yes. Duh. I forgot for a second. I'm like, oh yeah, that The Rock. Okay, clearly The Rock is
number one. But the problem is like, if you look at, and John Cena is starting to get there, but The Rock, unfortunately, plays The Rock in every movie.
Yeah,
true.
That's John true. Cena God's, is starting to get there. He's starting to get to his humorous side a lot more, which is awesome. But like, Drax actually is showing a very actually diverse set of movies with Cabin in the Woods, or what was it? Knock at the Cabin.
Yeah, I want to see that. I still
and like it that. Was dark good performance, for him. Huh? Yeah, like he did a great job, and like I will say, he's probably one of the best actors from a wrestling career.
And
I can't wait to see what more he does, because I think he deserves it. He's been doing a hell of a job.
Yeah. So, all right. So they get to this planet, and then they obviously have this long-awaited confrontation with a high evolutionary, which ultimately ends with the fact that, you know, Rocket could kill him, but he doesn't. He chooses not to in the end, which I think is the right choice. And it also shows how far Rocket has come, because the Rocket from the first or second movie would have killed him without a second's hesitation, I believe. But I think Rocket has learned in all the time. And granted, remember, we've only seen a few missions that they've gone on, right? They've been on, you know, many, many missions over the years that they've been together, right? And I think that over that time, especially, you know, between the second and the third movie, I think that Rocket has learned that there are some things worse than death. And so leaving the high evolutionary, you know, in a puddle of his own, whatever, and everything, I think that is, in his mind, probably, you know, the right fate for him, which I applauded. So let's dive in and talk about character dynamics, because there's certain storylines, because there's a lot to wrap up here for the characters. Let's talk about Star-Lord. So he's been drinking quite a bit. It seems like he's been doing that a lot at the beginning of this movie. They kind of reference the fact this is happening a lot. The Gamora that has come back, the one that you know, is brought back from an alternate timeline, is not, of course, his Gamora, who's dead. And this Gamora does not have feelings for him whatsoever. She's antagonistic. She doesn't really have time for the Guardians of the Galaxy. In fact, is it the Raiders?
Ravagers.
Yeah. Ravagers. You know, those are kind of, that's her family. And one of the things that I thought was interesting is that, you know, at the end of the movie, she kind of has this, she gains a mutual respect. I think at the end, she comes to understand, probably in some small way, why the other Gamora ended up finding a family here and, you know, developing the feelings and attachment to this crew. But at the end, she goes back to the Ravagers, which the last, you know, scene of her, that, you know, it's, you know, she's embracing all of them. You can tell there's a lot of warmth there. That is her version of the Guardians of the Galaxy for her character now. This is her family. And I thought that was interesting. And it was, I applauded them doing that, because it would have been so easy in this movie to make her, you know, come around. You know, she finally starts to fall in love with Star-Lord just a little bit. And you know what? She decides to stick around with the Guardians, because, you know, it would have been really easy to make that choice. And that would have been the wrong choice, in my opinion. So what do you guys think of that?
Just with the way she played out as a character?
Sure.
I mean, it's probably the most realistic result, you know, of her, her new self, if you will. So I was all right with it, but, you know, as a fan, you almost wish there would, you know, she would have figured out a way to like him more. You know what I mean? Just because you're kind of rooting for the guy, you know.
Yeah, but it does make it does make more sense, considering the fact that this was also before, this was Gamora before she ever interacted with them.
Right.
Getting thrust into what they perceived as 7 years, probably at this point, of a relationship with her, and she has no attachment. So, like, it's like how in anything involving like time travel, where the guy's trying to go back and find a way to get the girl, like it comes across almost stalkerish and creepy in a lot of ways. So like it makes sense for her to not really have that attachment with them until the end of this movie, even the little bit that she does.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. This is the Gamora we see within the first 15 minutes of the first movie.
Yeah.
You know.
And Gunn does a good job of selling that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you got to remember, you know, so Peter is, like, constantly pushing in this movie. Pushing, pushing, pushing. Just like, come on, just come around. I know you'll like me, and can't you? Yeah. And he does this to a point where she, like, basically explodes on the ship at him, because – like, you can tell he's probably been doing this for months and months and months, trying desperately to get her to show just the least bit of romantic interest in him, like something to build on, and it's just not there. And I appreciated that the storyline for her character wasn't there almost specifically for Peter. In his story, right? Yeah. She had her own story. She came to respect them in the end, have maybe some slight affection for the group. You know, if they were in trouble, she might try to help out occasionally, if, you know, but it's not like the old Gamora, clearly. So I did appreciate that. But what I liked about this is that in a lot of ways, one of the reasons why I like the fact that Gamora and her story ended the way it did is that it gave Peter permission to do what he probably should have done a long time ago, and that was go home.
Yeah.
Which he's been fearing to do for years. You know, he could have gone home a long time ago, and he never did. And I like that, you know, in a way, once he realized that Gamora wasn't an option, and once he realized that he needed to turn the Guardians over, that finally freed him up to do something, which was go find his actual family again. And so that was, to me, a good end to his story arc, at least for now, which I, you know, he's coming back. We saw the end of the movie. We saw the text on the screen. So he's going to show up in other Avengers, upcoming Avengers movies. And he's going to be basically, he's going to be the Iron Man of the next 4 to 5 years, where Robert Downey Jr. showed up in Spider-Man and showed up in this and showed up in that and showed up in Avengers movies. Obviously, after the last Iron Man movie came out, he was in a ton of those movies leading up to, you know, Avengers Endgame. So mm-hmm. I think that's what Star-Lord is going to do. I think Chris Pratt's going to stick around. I think he's going to be around for at least a few more years, and he's going to show up in a few different properties.
Yeah.
So what did you guys think of Star-Lord's story arc? Jacob, what were your thoughts?
It was very well done. It was very needed, like you mentioned. He had been running for so long from Earth that seeing a character like Rocket doing what he did and no longer running finally pushed him to do what he needed to. And it was so well done. And it was so satisfying to see him finally grow up, honestly. Like, because to be honest, he's, even in the first two, he's never been an adult. He's just been a 30, 40-year-old kid that took what he wanted because he could.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, he was taken from his family at, how old was he? 11?
Yeah, like it was, this whole thing really helped kind of cement that he finally became the person that he needed to be to go home and confront his demons.
Yeah, I agree. Raker, do you have any comments on that? Or are there any story arcs, any characters that you want to bring up that you want to talk about there?
No, I thought Star-Lord had a nice fitting ending. You know what I mean? Like, that was cool to see him go back to Earth, because now we all know we can tie him into the rest of the Marvel movies as they deep fit. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Pratt, as always, does a good job. This movie didn't have as much of him as the other movies, you know. Mm-hmm. Granted, this was more focused on Rocket, as we've mentioned. But, you know, he did a good job as Star-Lord. And, you know, I think it was a good, you know, like, I think Gunn had a good way of calling it a wrap for these guys. You know what I mean? This mm-hmm. is how this is going to end up for him. This is how it's going to end up for her. And this is, you know, you have an idea of, like, as the movie ends, okay, this is ultimately what becomes of them. You know, I respect that. I thought that was pretty well done on his behalf.
Let's talk about Nebula. I really like what they did with Nebula in this movie as well. It's amazing when you see her character. You go back to the second movie. And you see how, you know, she was basically bent on Gamora's death.
Uh-huh.
And she's gone from that to where she ends up in this movie. And it's just,
yeah,
it's pretty impressive. And I think, you know, I don't know that Karen Gillan gets enough credit for her acting.
No, I agree.
She is really, really good in this
movie. Yeah. And it goes to show how much of an impact Infinity War and Endgame had on that character.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah.
It did like a lot of heavy lifting. Job of alluding to that with her relationship with Rocket.
I think they did a good job all in all of, like, mentioning, you know, the whole Infinity War stuff, but not going overboard with it. You know what I mean? Sure. They did, you know, how he told that little story. Well, here's how, you know, when they were in the elevator or whatever, not elevator, wherever they were at, you know, the compartment there where he's like, okay, well, she was this and this and this and this and that. You know what I mean? Like, Star-Lord kind of gave that lowdown to the...
Trying to explain to the girl why Gamora wasn't into him.
Yeah. That was really about it, though, in terms of, like, tying things to the rest of the MCU. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I thought that was kind of cool how they kept... A Guardians kind of kept it to themselves, like what was going on. You know what I mean? I thought, anyway.
Yeah.
thought that was well done. But...
Because it wasn't forced like there a lot of other go. Things that yeah. keeps trying to be like, oh, the blip this, the blip yeah. that every 30 minutes that tries to keep reminding yep. you that the blip happened.
Yeah.
Like right. it alluded to it, and but it made sense of when they alluded to it or yep. referenced it.
Agreed.
Yeah, I agree. I think they did that just right. I want to do a brief shout out to Kraglin. you know, it's, you know, Sean Gunn, you know, obviously James Gunn's brother. I've watched him for years and various things. And, you know, he's always been this very kind of minorish character throughout the series. And what I liked about this is that he almost got just enough screen time. It didn't go overboard. Mm-hmm. You know, he inherited, you know, Yondu's magical, I don't know, arrow, whatever.
Yeah. The whistling arrow.
And, you know, watching him trying to master that thing and then ultimately, you know, really mastering it at the end when it was absolutely necessary. Was fantastic, and I thought that was just a nice touch to this movie. Really cool. I want to talk about Rocket here before we wrap up, obviously, because this movie centers on him. So we finally got his backstory. You know, the High Evolutionary basically took him. He had a whole cage full of raccoons and, you know, grabbed him. The experiments that they performed on him, which obviously, you know, increased his intelligence.
Even Nebula says,
huh?
When even Nebula made a mention of how horrible it was compared to what she went through.
Which is telling you how bad it is. If Nebula is saying that, that's something. But what really stood out for me.
Yeah, but you know what? Oh, when she said that was almost like the. That was worse than what he did to me. Like, it's like, I don't think that needed to be said.
Okay.
I thought that was kind of corny.
It's like, interesting. Oh,
I do. When she said it, I cringed the first time and I cringed. I saw this movie twice. Okay. I cringed the first time and I cringed the second time just because I thought that was just one of those, like, ooh, just in order for us to say how terrible this is, you know, let's have her say, well, this is worse than what happened to me. You know what I mean? I think she could have phrased it differently. I think I think it was written poorly.
Okay.
But that's here nor there. Just throwing that out there.
So what I liked about this though was, you know, we got to see his history and how he became. It's weird. I'm gonna kind of make a comparison here. It's gonna make no sense. James Bond. If you go back to, and this is just spoiler warning for Casino Royale, go back to, you know, Daniel Craig's Casino Royale from 2005. I'm just tossing this out here now because I'm going to, you know, do some spoiler stuff to make this point. But, you know, James Bond, if you want to know how James Bond became James Bond, why he kind of just, you know, sleeps with a bunch of women, doesn't care, has no soul, doesn't care about them whatsoever. The beginning of that, at least in the iteration that we see with Daniel Craig, is because of what he went through, Vesper Lynd in Casino Royale, when he lost her, when, you know, she betrayed him, when all that went down. You know, that created the blueprint for how he became who he became after her. And that's kind of what I thought about when I thought of Rocket here, which is, you know, Rocket was sweet and kind, and he had friends, and there were other creatures that were experimented on, and it was, you know, very wonderful, very nice to see, very innocent, and then they were taken away from him. And after he lost them, I think he lost that innocence and that part of himself completely. And it took many, many years and, you know, basically this whole version of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies plus everything else we've seen them in to get him kind of as close to back to that as he could get realistically. Because, you know, we see why Rocket became kind of this soulless, you know, in it for me, I'll kill anything and everything, don't care about you, just the person that we see at the beginning in the first Guardians movie. How did he get there? This is how he got there. He lost everybody that mattered to him all those years ago. And I thought that, I mean, I could see it coming a mile away, but I was still very affected by everything that happened there. So what were your guys' thoughts on all those flashbacks that we got and just his general story and how it lined up with the Rocket that we see now?
Here's the thing. I was never a big Rocket fan. Like, mm-hmm. You know, I love this series, but I never really got into the whole character of Rocket. He was just kind of a peripheral. Mm-hmm. But after this movie, you know, I know he's animated and, you know what I mean? He's voiced by Bradley Cooper, and I'm sure they make some tweaks to his voice to make him sound like, you know, Rocket. But, like, it was just like, wow, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to say gained respect for the man. Mm-hmm. But you know what I mean? Like, it really made me think, wow, you know, he is so much more important than I ever would have thought. And it's just really cool to see, you know, trace him back, like what he says in this movie, tracing back to the previous two movies. There ain't no me like me. You know what I mean? Like, if you just keep, there ain't no thing like, you know what I mean? I can't remember what the exact line was that he used, but I just kept thinking back to his, you know, when he would reference his past, it all made so much more sense. And then when he became the new leader of the Guardians, and I remember the comic where he kind of did that, it was just all, it worked for me, mm-hmm. You know? So I definitely got more in tune with his character as being a main player in the franchise because of this movie. I had no problem with the flashbacks. I mean, they did start to get a little burdensome at times when it was like, oh, here we go, another flashback. Mm-hmm. But man, you know, I had somebody tell me today, they were like, who'd have thought that you would feel anything for these, you know, robot animals. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it was amazing the way Gunn could make you feel for floor and teeth. And
it was heart wrenching.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. Dude. Just
amazing. I you know, and the more those flashbacks, the more you got into those characters as well, you know, plus, you know, because of those flashbacks, you got High Evolutionary. So, mm-hmm. You know, if this is, you know, back to your original point, Michael, like, oh, you know, I had no problem with it because I think that's what made the movie.
Yep.
Was these flashbacks.
I agree.
Yeah. And it really put a capstone on Rocket as a whole. Mm-hmm. When you, and I've seen videos and people looking back to like rewatching one and two, so many scenes with Rocket hit so differently now. Like when they get into a fight at the bar and he yells because Gamora calls him rodent or vermin, and Drax calls him monster.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. If you look back at those first two movies, you would notice so much, you know what I mean? And this is the type of movie that makes you want to watch the first two just to see these little things.
Yeah.
You know, which is just more the genius of James Gunn. Yeah, the guy's an absolute, he's so awesome.
Yep.
He's so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I think it's a great end to the movie, or not the movie, the trilogy. You know, there really isn't, to me, there isn't really a whole lot to criticize. I do think there was a couple of slower points, not even slower. I think there were a couple of pacing issues where I was a little frustrated. There were a couple of times where jokes went on a little too off, too much, or they went on a little too long. But I mean, we're talking very minor issues in an otherwise really good movie. So I can't really say I had much in the way of complaints. I was just fully invested in seeing how they wanted to end the story of these characters, at least a lot of them for now. You know, like I said, we might get some more you know, might see a few of these characters in the future, but we're not likely to see Gamora or Rocket or, you know, and definitely not Drax. So, you know, a few might survive, but we're definitely not getting the others. So, but I think we should wrap it up. So, I think we can all agree. I think we're all in agreement. This is a really good movie. And if you haven't seen it, and you, for some reason, you decided, hey, I don't care, I'm going to listen to this anyway. Well, you've just listened to a lot of the spoilers, but if you haven't seen it, I say, you know, if you got time today, tomorrow, drop whatever you're doing, go to the movie theater, watch this. It's totally worth it.
Yeah, agreed.
So, all right. So any final thoughts, Raker or Jacob, before we head out?
No, you know, Jake, I think you said it best before the podcast started. You know, Jake was like, hey, it's like old Marvel over again. You know what I mean? Like, this could be the beginning of the good Marvel movies again, because there's been such a lull recently. Yeah. This could be the stretch again where Marvel cranks out 6-7 winners. But of course, you know, the loss of James Gunn is going to be felt some way, somehow. In my opinion, the only, you know, good directors left in Marvel without Gunn will be the Russos. I'm not sold on Waititi yet after the last Thor movie. So, you know, and the Ant-Man director, I mean, I know it got, you know, panned pretty good, but I mean, I didn't think it was bad, but it definitely wasn't the level of James Gunn. So Marvel has their work cut out for them without James Gunn, and it's going to be hard to find a director that, you know what I mean, can get back the magic that he gave to Marvel. So
they need to start finding some unique voices.
Yes, they do. Perfect. Yep. So that's my final thoughts.
All right, Jacob Beers, anything?
No, he said it perfectly. Just
actually, you said it originally, Jake.
Well, yeah, but like, you're right. Marvel has got a tough road ahead of it, and they need to get some unique and talented people behind the screen, as so that way we can get good properties and quit and make sure they don't interfere. Give them the freedom like James Gunn has.
Yep.
Like, you show, it's shown to work. Let it work.
I agree. That's exactly what they got to do. So, well, let's see if this is the thing that starts the next great phase of the MCU. But we'll see. As I said earlier, the proof will be in the pudding. So, all right, everyone. Well, hopefully you guys enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 as much as we did. And we will see you guys next time on the
Thanks for listening Geeks to podcast. The Freaking Geeks Podcast. Be sure to visit freakinggeeks.com as well as our Patreon page at patreon.com/freakinggeeks for more great content. Also, please consider rating and reviewing us on iTunes. Trust us, it really helps. Now, if you'd like to write into the podcast and share your thoughts and ask questions, you can do so by sending your email to freakinggeeksmedia@gmail.com. You can contact Michael on Twitter using @Michael_Lanich. You can contact Sarah on Twitter using @LabyrinthRose or @FreakGeeks.
Intro music for this episode is Danger Storm by Kevin MacLeod, which can be found at incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Outro music is Nowhere Land by Kevin MacLeod, which can be found at incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. You can also find the attribution in the episode description as well.